Right.
Yeah, so it's the stringency in application, and therefore they went out against it. The Sfaradim attacked it from the word go, and basically thought it was, even though the custom was there, it was the custom among Ashkenazim, and you know what Sfaradim think of us. You know, any Sfaradim here? So Sfaradim look at us always as being, you know, over the top, you know what I mean? And so, the Rambam extended an invitation to the Balei HaTosfot and the Ashkenazi scholars to come to Spain and chill out for a while. The weather would do them good and make them smile and, you know, and welcome, come in. So already there you start to see that, you know, whatever, we're not going to go into it now, but in principle, I'll just give you an idea, an approach, just to try and show you why Ashkenazim and Sfaradim are slightly different, the approach towards halachic methodology, but just as an overview so that you can get a feel of this. I would use two phrases. One is a method of inclusive psak, psak is decision making, or exclusive psak. Now, let's say you have an argument between scholars. How do you decide what to do? So there's two ways to approach the argument. Either you can say, look, let's not offend either one and create a hybrid approach, which will allow us to develop a custom or a law which won't violate either one. So the classic, most famous halacha that you'll all be able to fully recognize is Rashi says a mezuzah should be vertically straight. Rabbeinu Tam says it should be completely horizontal. Right, that's Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam.
So we split the difference, so we just put it on
an angle. And so what we do is we go for the angle. Who said you should do it at an angle? Nobody. Right? But according to Rashi, at a slight angle, it's okay. Not brilliant, but okay. And according to Rabbeinu Tam, at a slight angle, it's okay. Not brilliant. So an inclusive method of psak, which is hallmark Ashkenazi approach to halacha, we prefer to take a hybrid position, which is not ideal according to either, but not in violation of either. That's our preference.
Would that be with kashrut also?
Everything. Almost everything.
Yeah, 1 hour, 6 hours.
I tell you now, with most approaches to halacha and argumentation, Ashkenazi halachic approach is inclusive. Right? Sfaradim have an exclusive methodological approach to halacha and to argument. They will say like this, okay, who are the greatest of the scholars that are here? There's a pool of them. And out of that pool, we will look for the majority most of the time and exclude the minority. So if the Shulchan Aruch is looking to see, right, who are the people that are arguing the points, so let's just say the three pillars of halacha in medieval times, early medieval times, you have the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh. Let's look at those three pillars of halacha. If the majority of the two of them against the minority, we exclude the minority and go for the majority. And so therefore, it's a much neater, less stringent approach. Stringency comes because you want to make everybody happy. When you want to make your whole family happy, it gets complicated. Ashkenazim are complicated. Our halacha is complicated, right? Bottom line is, Sfaradi halacha is neat to the point. This is right, this is wrong. The majority yes, the minority no. Later on, we'll study the minority opinion to get reward for studying Torah.
What is the Ashkenazi one based on? Because like the Sfaradi, there's the principle Acharei Rabbi Menachot. So what is...
Well, I don't want to get into this now, because just, I just wanted to give you an overview of flavor, but I'm happy to do a shiur on it, because it's really fascinating. You know, to me, I always enjoyed the methodological approaches. But understand... A Sfaradi approach, the Sfaradi halacha is very bold. It will take a position, even if it excludes others. So, you know, a minhag will come, like this kitniot, people say, oh, there's a stringency here. Scholars will look at it, the rabbonim will say, hey, come on, guys, we all know that can't become chametz. We're not interested in this chumra. Bang. Oh, there's a minhag, we'll stop it right there. We'll say, basna. Ashkenazim will start to say, well, look, maybe there was an opinion. There is an opinion, there could be an opinion, should be an opinion, you know, and we'll say, look, you know, it's Pesach, And our approach is, you know, inclusive. We will look to, hey, listen, somebody's got a point. There's no question that the minhag came from somebody making a mistake. The Gaon of Vilna always, as his way is to take every minhag in Chazal and to source it in the Gemara. So the Gaon of Vilna points to a point, you know, points to a Gemara where he says, listen, you know, Rava came home and he saw something being mixed up there in the kitchen. He saw there was a mistake, and he made a point of saying, whoa, we've got to be careful over here. We've got to be very, very careful how you make this. And if you're going to use rice and if you're going to use millet, you know, you basically, to stop it becoming chometz, you know, you've got to boil it, completely boil it. You know, and then straight away, possibly into cold water. And there was a whole method of approach. He saw the kitchen, there were mistakes. So, you know, the Gaon will say, listen, look, yes, it's got a source somewhere. The stringency has a source. But the methodological approach will need to be taken into account of when you want to understand halacha and argumentation and how we resolve these things. You need to look at that properly. But I'm just giving you an overview just to so you feel that, you know, we understand how different opinions and positions are taken in different places. And so the custom to be stringent with kitniot took hold among Ashkenazim and not among Sfardim. And therefore, the great divide, whereas they have a fantastic Seder and we... I mentioned yesterday to a group of Hevra that the following humorous scenario, you've got to understand, dealing with me, you need a sense of humor. So I was giving a shiur once, I was in a particular Meshulach came to town, you know, an Israeli fellow, and he was a Hasidish guy. And anyway, I was talking about Gebrochs and non-Gebrochs, etc., you know, Pesach time. Anyway, so eventually, you know, he says to me, he couldn't believe that I don't keep Gebrochs. He says, you know, you're not particular about Gebrochs, you know what I mean? You know what that is, any matzah or matzah product
in liquid,
right? So I said, I'm a Litvak, man. The Litvaks didn't hold of this. You know, I mean, eventually people took on certain strictures, but in principle, I said, you know, my family, we came from, we took on a lot of the Gaon of Vilna's minhagim, and, you know, the Gebrochs, no. So then he says to me, you know, he has a dig at me. He says to me, okay, he says, therefore, when I take leave of you and I wish you Chag Sameach. I said, oh, okay, Chag Sameach. He says, no. He says, I would have wished you Chag Kasher Sameach. I'm only wishing you Chag Sameach. You know? So, of course, he gave me an opening. And being one not to take the opening to make the joke, I said to him, okay, so I wish you Chag Kasher. Because you can't be happy without the rocks, right? So in the end of the day, that's how we are. I mean, so it's all fantastic. Now, yeah, the minhag of kitniot becomes Ashkenazi, and Sfaradim you know, have rice, etc. With all the remarks and you know, ingest, yeah, but to be serious, the minhag became accepted and therefore fiercely protected, and there were great. Great, great poskim among Ashkenazi jury who warned us that this is a way to go and we should never violate this particular din of kitniot. Now the question is, okay, so what does it include? Legumes, you know, is a category. How far do we go? How far do we go? So now, what's interesting is like this. In certain societies, I didn't realize this too until reading up about it, but the potato is actually quite a recent phenomenon. Meaning Europeans never knew of potatoes. I thought the Irish sort of invented them, but no, it came from South America. The Europeans came late to the potato industry, and in fact, the potatoes that came there were, you know, till it took hold. You know, Europe's a difficult place, so it took a while for potatoes to take root there. But bottom line is, potato flour. Everybody, you know, you try. Bottom line is, people came along and said potatoes. Can be ground out to flour, it can be confused with proper flour of grain, and therefore potatoes are kidney. You shouldn't have potatoes. You know what I've done to your Seder now? You know what I mean? It's like you know, unbelievable. So Ramosha Feinstein came up with a psak. And Ramosha said like this. He said, because the concept of kidney is a difficult one, excuse the pun, to swallow, meaning it's like a real stricture, but we do it. We do it, there's no question, from Ashkenazi point of view. But we're going to tell you that because it's rabbinic in nature, and it was a custom which became a law, and this custom in its rabbinic form is not the same as, you know, a Torah law by any stretch. whatever at the time was bracketed into the legislation of this custom, that's going to be in it. But if we find new things outside of the original clause of this decree or minag, even if it can be turned into flour and then turned into somewhat like bread, we're going to leave it alone. And so potatoes was new. Potatoes wasn't incorporated. We're leaving potatoes in. And even though there are one or two customs communities who would leave it out, we're leaving it in. And now the question arises, today we find a lot of interesting, different types of what look like grains. And this is the big argument now, does this apply across the board? So when people started becoming, acquainted with quinoa, is quinoa part of it or not? These became big questions. The lenient opinion looks around down at Moshe's line and says it wasn't originally in the Gezeirah, in the so-called legislature. We're leaving it alone. So fennel and all these different kinds of whether they're vegetables or they grains or they legumes, anything that came in afterwards, we're going to leave alone. The Machmir opinion will say no. If it looks like flour, and it can be confused, we will outlaw it. So when you get online now and you say, right, everybody likes quinoa. Quinoa salad's all healthy and it's all in and all that kind of thing. Whatever it is, an apology for us, but okay. man's got to eat, So at the end of the day, yes, can we use quinoa or not? So that's what you'll find. You'll get online and you'll find this kasher authority will be strict or not. This one will be lenient. And that's more or less where it goes. Now, in 1909, a major argument emerged in Israel between Rav Kook on the one hand, as Rav Kook and the Bedatz, the Beit Din Tzedek of Yerushalayim, right? The Enacharet of Yerushalayim. Now, what was the argument? The argument was, what are we going to do with kitniot derivatives? You're going to take a seed. You're going to pulverize it down and you're going to make oil. What do we do with cotton seed oil? Sesame seed oil? Sunflower oil? Now, the Rama actually writes that kitniot derived oil should be stayed away from. The question is, when the Rama wrote it, how do we understand what he was writing in there? So Rav Kook had an interpretation of the Rama and understood. He said, if you look at the points leading up to where the Rama is holding, the problem here is that when you crush down those legumes to make oil, those seeds to make oil, we always worried about that there will be chomet seed inside there. There'll be a bit of wheat, there'll be a bit of barley, there'll be something in there. Because the mixing in those days was so prevalent. So when you crush it down, you may have already chomet seed inside there. But if you come along and say that the way that production works already then, where there was no chance of mixing it in. There was no chance of mixing it in. And number two, you tell me that oil does not look like anything like flour. So therefore, if I can get rid of the problem that oil, that seeds, chomet stuff, might be actually in the mix. And now that oil doesn't look like anything close to flour, you'd never get mixed up. And so that's how he interpreted the Rama. He basically said, the Rama, we have to put a caveat there. He said, no kitniot oil. But because what lay behind that was that they were scared of what was going to be inside the mix when you bring it down to oil. But if you're not scared of what's going to be in there, then you're never going to get mixed up between oil and flour. It doesn't look the same. That was how he interpreted the Rama. As a result of that, he okayed for Pesach use oil that was derived from kitniot. And so sunflower oil or sesame seed oil, cotton seed oil, became with his stamp of approval. The Badats in Yerushalayim, really went against this. And they felt, no, they're going to read the Rama as neat. And therefore all oil, these derivatives are going to be... And this became a major, major issue. And so communities were split on this concept, what to do. Now, Rav Kook didn't only do it on his own. He had the backing of a lot of major poskim. So, one of the major posek at the time in Europe in Lithuania, was Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, who, you know, the abbreviation of his name makes up, you know, it's called Ritz in YU, was named after him, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. So he said, like, Rav Cook's right. You know, and there were a number of great poskim who all felt that that was correct. So therefore, it wasn't just a one person, it was a lot of people. And bottom line is, communities took it on. So growing up in Johannesburg, for example, where there, the poskim who had already set custom at the beginning of the 20th century, there was leniencies in these oils. And you could get these, you would be able to get these oils kosher Pesach. Whereas what I understand from here is that they never used these oils. And it became, through communities, big questions about chametz derivatives. Kitniot derivatives. And the minute the modern day food industry began to use, you know, all these derivatives, you had to ask big questions. And every single halachic authority and kashrut agency had to take into account what they were going to do. And so, corn, right, is going to be kitniot. You know, corn syrup is a derivative of kitniot. What do you do with corn syrup? Now, one of the major breakthroughs, in the food industry, you know, in the 60s, was corn syrup. You know, so it was much cheaper, and especially in America, you know, that corn, you know, for the whole continent. So they would use corn and they'd use the syrup to basically, you know, sweeten everything. Health-wise, it's a disaster. But bottom line is, corn syrup now becomes a base ingredient. What do you do now when that is used? So if you hold that corn syrup is like a derivative of kitniot and you have the same issue, then Rav Cook would say, fine, go for it. If you're going to be machmir, then you say, no, like the badatz, not going to use it. And so what I would say today, in a generalization, is that despite the various lenient opinions, Pesach has taken on a very strict approach. And therefore, most kashrut agencies, you know, are always under pressure to be machmir so that they'll get the most constituents and it'll be financially worth it. Right? The more chevra you can get in, everybody's happy, and so therefore you have this machmir approach. So we have to stay away from it. And so much so does the industry get influenced by this that's where Coca-Cola had to change its recipe. And so, classic Coke, not the other funny stuff, right? The classic Coke that we all are addicted to. So, classic Coke is fueled with corn syrup. Now, in order to make kosher Pesach Coke, they have to go back to the original classic recipe and put in sugar, which is much less sweet than corn syrup. And so, here's the irony. You can get online and you'll start to see it. And that is that there are goyim, non-Jews, who cannot wait for Pesach because they stock up with all the Pesachdika Coke because we all grew up on that one and the other one that we have too sweet. And so they take the sugar-based Coke and not the corn syrup Coke. And that's why people will say, what do you have to have kosher Pesach Coke for? Or any, you know, because there are kitniot-derived ingredients inside this issue, inside the product. And that's what the big issue is. And, you know, each person that asked their off, the community takes on to make a minag. And so, bottom line is, number one, just to summarize over here, the scope of how wide kitniot is, you know, do we go like Rav Moshe Feinstein and that approach, which will only limit it to what was at the time of legislature and not anything else, even though you could make flour out of it. There's a product that's coming out right now as we speak. It's There's a diet which is called banting. You know, the idea behind the diet is no carbs, no sugar, high fat content. And so the theory is, within the dieting world, that we've been all fed a lie, and that is this idea that fats that come out of meat, you know, or fish, or avocados, whatever, you know, all that fat is good for you. Not bad for you. And you should have as much of it as you can. As long as you don't mix it with carbs or sugar. Right? So, you know, that's basically what it is. And so, if you hold of it, good. You don't hold of it, also good. Whatever the case is, that's the vort. So now you're going to say, what do you tucker eat? You know, besides protein. So, we've got to trick you. Or we've got to make it easier for you. So they create a muesli. Right? I've tried the muesli. It's very nice. I take a muesli, and the muesli is called Banting muesli. And in South Africa, it's massive. You know, bottom line is that all my mates are on this thing, right? And they've put me on it, and they say, right, let's see if you're going to lose any weight. I say, high fat? They give it to me, man. You know? So they tell me, oh, it's got to be healthy fats. Fine. You know what I mean? So, anyway, the point is that they want muesli. They want bread. But you can't have bread. So you've got to make your own bread. So there's like, you know, factory-produced now muesli, where you can get, it's all the Banting okay muesli stuff. But half of it's kidney oat. Right? It's got seeds in, right? So now, from now, like last week, you can now buy it here, KA Kosher Australia certified, for Pesach. There's a special run they're doing for Pesach. You know? And you can buy the muesli, and you can buy the bread mix. The bread mix. So because the bread mix is all seeds. And I've had the bread, you know? I've had the bread.
Or coconut.
Anything that is healthy tastes awful. So, the bottom line is it's very healthy stuff. It's very healthy stuff. You know, but seeds. It's all seeds. But in order to make a Pesach, so now you've got mamash, a bread mix. You know, it's like mamash. Like can you imagine the first time they put out pot of milk? Everybody was like doing this. Like, is it really? Then now you've got, you know, kosher Pesach bread mix. And the flour is all ground down. Non-kidneyot flour. Non-kidneyot flour. So look what you can do. You can make bread that looks like bread from non-kidneyot flour. So all those, can imagine the Machmir opinion will look at it and say, is this the spirit of Pesach? I'm gonna try and look into this. I'm going to try and eat this over Pesach. Instead of, you know, gorging myself sick on matzah. Right? I've got an alternative. I can't use it for the Seder because you can just about make a broch on this thing.
You can make rolls from potato flour, but it's not
the same. Right. So, anyway, bottom line is like, you can't make a mochi on this, it's brei pri adama. And the bottom line is, you know, you have a look at it and you say, wow, that's unbelievable, right? So, the point I'm trying to make is that when Rabbanim in yesteryear said, look, there's a problem because you will make bread out of this and it looks very similar, you know, you can see what you can make bread out of it. Bread can look like a hell of a lot today. But not be bread. So if you have this bread mix for Pesach, and then somebody sees you doing it, and it comes with a loaf, you come with a loaf looking, you know, thing to the table, you know, you can see what's going to happen. People are going to look at you and say, well, look, it's ridiculous. I'm just going to go and get the regular loaf. You know? By the way, there would be a very big irony, but I'll just say this to be somewhat provocative, but it wasn't me so much as the Rav that I saw do this. There's a big Talmid Chochem in Israel who used to learn at the Gush many years ago when I was there. Rav Shabtai Rappaport is his name. He's the grandson to the Sokotchover Rebbe, and he has his own. He has the yeshiva, but he used to teach in the Gush, and he's a very scientific individual. And he basically brought a whiteboard into the classroom, and he proved scientifically that today bread that you buy in the bakery is not chometz. Right? Can you imagine what everybody's like? Well, like Angel's Bakery, right? Why? Because he showed. He showed that the amount of heat that is pumped through the system will bake a loaf of bread that we call proper bread and chometz in 10 minutes. Right? So, he tried to prove it. He had scientific measurements over there. We were all laughing away because that's his kind of shtick, you know? But anyway, and the point is that in those days, this is 1986 I'm talking about, He would make his own matzah. And he made his own matzah, which was today the controversial soft matzah. It was pita looking. You know? Anyway, he married into the family of Rav Moshe Feinstein. He married Rav Moshe Tendler's daughter, so Rav Feinstein's granddaughter. Anyway, so he went. So I know I said to him, you know, in the class that we were having, I said to him, so do you take this for Pesach? Like, he says, yeah. He says, I said, what happens when you get to your father-in-law's table? He said, my father-in-law took one look at this, he sold it for chometz on the spot. You know, that's the kind of... So it takes a while for us to deal with these things. Bottom line is, that's where we're holding at the moment. Now, just to end off, where another applicable shaila is, and that is like this. Many of us can get lucky enough and go to Israel for Pesach. Now, you go to Israel for Pesach, if you're in a hotel, okay, I'll tell you. This is a non-kidneyot based menu, non-gebrochs menu, right? And everybody's happy, no problem. However, when you go there and you rent an apartment for yourself, now you walk outside and in the middle of Yerushalayim, you know, walking Dynamic Rephaim, you're walking Ben Yehuda, all of a sudden you'll see half the restaurants are open for, half the restaurants are open now. So now you say, 1 second, ah, they will open, what they, and you go in there, and you go in and there's like a full on menu, right, but it's got kitniot. Because, you know, believe it or not, the majority of Jews are Sephardi. So there's a lot of people out there. It took us a long time to realize that, you know. Like Litvaks also, you know, until I came to Australia, I much thought that all Ashkenazim were Litvaks. I never saw a Polish person, you know, or a Hungarian, right, like you didn't know what they were. In South Africa, they didn't, you know, I don't know, they didn't let them in.
Yeah.
You know, so bottom line is like, you know, us Litvaks, we make such a noise, you know, and there was so much prominent Torah there. What do you think? There's hardly anybody else around. You know, I came here, you know, I was like, it's like a battle of Shishim here. You know, there's like nobody else to talk to. So in the end of the day, this is the story. Svarim, you know, Svarim are the numbers. So now, what do you do now? You want to go into the restaurant, it's Kosher Pesach. You walk in there, you know, and you check the menu, and the one menu's got, you know, for gebrox eating people, non-gebrox eating people, for kitniot eating people, for lo lo achle kitniot, in the same restaurant. Which means that there are kalim there, which are basically crossbred. You know, they're not going to have like, are they going to literally have a separate pot for the rice, you know, and the, you know what I mean, and something else? Are they going to do that? Well, if they do that, they'll have lots of, you know, approvals from everybody. But the chances are that you can use the same kalim that are used for kitniot to be used for, and that's the shaila. Can an Ashkenazi person who is very sensitive to the minag, can you go to a Sephardi restaurant, to a restaurant that has kalim used for kitniot? And the question is a serious one now, because it really can smash families up, which is a big, big pity. So let's say in today's day and age, there's intermarriage, right? Ashkenazim, Sephardim, you know, and everybody's married now. And I imagine if your father-in-law invites you all for Pesach, he's Sephardi, you're Ashkenazi, you can't go. You say, we can't spend Pesach as a family together. So, are there heterim over here? Even if your father-in-law, or, you know, your mother-in-law, is more important, will say, listen, all right, I won't cook kitniot for you. But I'm not buying a whole new set of kalim, right? That's fair. So now the shaila is, can you have non-kitniot baked, cooked stuff coming out of kitniot used kalim?
Sure.
Huh?
No, you can't.
So this is the shaila.
It's not chomet,
but there's a midnight not to eat it. So the question is, how far do you have to go? How far do you have to go? This is a big shaila. So bottom line is, you'll find poskim. Rav Avadi Yosef, it's best to ask us Friday this question. So Rav Avadi Yosef writes to her, and he says, of course you can. You know, of course you can. He tries to bring a good number of proofs to try and show the issue. He tries to show where there were other cases of minhag. Other cases of minhag, where you have, according to some people, prohibited substance and others not. So, for example, there's a thing called chadash. Not to eat chadash, not to eat flour, is considered new flour. The 16th of Nisan is the cut-off date. Any flour that comes afterwards, it's called chadash. That year, you shouldn't eat that flour. That's a din. The question is, what do you do in chutzaretz with that halacha? What do you do in chutzaretz with that halacha, right? So, most of the Ashkenazi world was makil. They were all lenient on this, right? The Gaon of Vilna, you know, kicked up a fuss about it and was machmir about it. But bottom line is that most Ashkenazim, you know, so every normal guy today is more or less makil on chadash, right? We're becoming a lot frumer, so now it's coming into vogue, the argument again, but that's the story. So the question is, can you eat, you can't eat new flour. You know, I hate to break it to you, when I tried to research it here in Australia when I first came here, it's interesting that you actually never eat fresh flour. You think you do, but it's not fresh. Bottom line is that at the time that I investigated, things could change. At the time that I investigated it, the shelf life of all your cereals, you know, your cereals, basically, the one that's the freshest out of all of them at the time, going back already a long time ago, was that Kellogg's one, that not the cornflakes, the other one?
Special K.
Special K was the freshest. The flour that was in there was more or less 12 months old. Everything else is at least 18 months old. So by the time it gets to you, it's already yashad, which is fine. So halachically, most of us don't have a problem. Right? But the point is that what happens if chadash got mixed up in yashad? You had new flour, it got mixed up into old flour from the kalim. And then you use that kli. So the Rama already says himself, on the Chadash issue, you can be Michael. So Rav Avadya says, you see, you've got a custom. Some people say yes, some people say no. The kalim, no problem. So he says, again, kitniot. Some people say yes, some people say no. Kalim, no problem. And he goes to try and prove that point, and therefore he recommended that no problem, you don't have to worry about the kalim. And so therefore, if you go into the restaurant and you order the non-kitniot menu, even though the kalim were used, that would be okay.
What did the Ashkenazi poskim?
They argue this point. And here, the big argument is, what? It's within 24 hours of use, right? And number two, it's also, you asked for it. It's not like you came there and, oh, what do I do now? We can't leave. You know, it's not like B'diyev, it's L'Achila. It's a big argument. There's a big argument still today. You know, the point is that, just to show you the scope of this minhag, the minhag started off on shaky grounds, meaning there was like, most people didn't do it. It was big stricture. The whole Sephardi world, you know, didn't give it much support at all. The Ashkenazim had an argument. Mainly Ashkenazim eventually adopted it and became Ashkenazi minhag, very strongly defended. The Chatam Sofer is quoted as being violently strong against people who try and play with the minhag. You know, and the others who are today, because of the scenarios in which we live, you know, will say, come on, this is ridiculous. You know, when you look online now, there is a kitniot support group. Right? There's a kitniot group which will basically say, you know, all these issues. People are trying to dilute the minhag as much as possible, especially because of the Israeli scenario. The mixed families and the restaurants.
And the supermarkets,
right? Where the irony used to be, I don't know still now, because I haven't been to Israel for Pesach for a long time. The irony used to be that it was so much easier for Ashkenazim to keep Pesach in Chutz Laaretz than in Israel. Because like what you're saying is true. You know, I was Pesach once in Israel. You go through those supermarkets, everything is the Ochlei Kitniot. You can only bite the shelf. That's the only thing you could take out of there. Everything else is out. From Bamba all the way through to, it's all Ochlei Kitniot. It can drive you mad. You had hardly a variety. And you came back home and you had Pesach with your parents. Well, okay, so in Chutz Laaretz they were bringing all the stuff from America. And the bottom line is, you know, it was much easier. The variety was much greater. So it is interesting to see this minhag and where it will go. You know, not taking sides on anything. I'll just probably say that, you know, you will probably start to see that there will be a lot of movement to try and question as food production becomes more and more precise science. And as we basically get to a point where, you know, the isolation of all the grains are simple and standardized, you know, the question will really be, you know, is this minhag dilutable or not? And, you know, I'm not going to tell you what, you know, but I will say that you start to see it's getting stronger and stronger. And, you know, Rabbonim will say, you know, take sides. They'll say, look, you know, keep the minhag as, you know, but as liberal as you can. And others will say, no, be very, very machmir, and they'll guide each other for this. But in principle, it does really get going, you know, with products. And, you know, just to I gave you the Coca-Cola example, but you can see that it extends to so much stuff, right? And when you look up different kosher authorities, they'll tell you what it is. The kitniot derivatives go to all sorts of things, like toothpaste. You know, we today are crazy. We make everything kosher Pesach, right? We go from dishwashing liquid, you know, to everything's got to have a hechsh on it. You know, dishwashing liquid, you know, how do you even have the chutzpah to tell me that I need to pay extra for dishwashing liquid? You know, because you're telling me it's like, Ra'ul Achilat who? You know, it's like crazy. You know, there's always this, Rav Lichtenstein once told us this famous little quote that they had a big debate in his day in Yeshiva University with toothpaste. Do you need kosher Pesach toothpaste, right? So Rav Soloveitchik felt you didn't need a kosher Pesach toothpaste. You know, and then a whole big argument ensued, you know, yes, you can eat it, you don't eat it, but you can if you want to. Who eats it? No. Eventually, you know, Rav Soloveitchik said, it's not Ra'ul Achilat Kelev. No dog eats toothpaste. So one Talmud put up his hand and said, I tried it, my dog ate it. So Rav Soloveitchik said, for your meshugan hunt, I'm not changing halacha. You know, so in the end of the day, that was the approach. But people could argue the point. People could argue and say, you know, today, you know, in our, today, We go out of our way to make toothpaste edible, especially for kids. You go and buy the that toothpaste with Winnie the Pooh on, right? What's it there? The ingredients are different. It's sweeter. It's made to be eaten and swallowed. You know, you don't look at your kid when he's swallowing toothpaste going, oh my God, I don't know where that's going to go. What's it going to do this? If he swallowed Listerine, you know, all right, you'll think, God, you know, like I'm in trouble. So now you're eating this paste. You got to keep up. We got to work out each time. People are actually eating it. You got to work out what the story is. You know, these are, and the kidney or derived products. If you take the Makil opinion, like, okay, he's like, fine, it's kidney or derived, I don't have to be Machmir. But the world is being Machmir. That's why. So, you know, that's the scope, that's the basis of the Minag. Those are the controversies behind it. And, you know, we'll see where it goes.
Ask something. Right at the beginning, you said the reason originally for not eating kidney root was because you could make flour from the kidney root, from the legumes.
Yeah.
I mean, you can eat legumes without making flour.
Right, but they're scared if you eat it and you'll make flour out of it and it'll look the same and you can get confused and chomets will come in. We're very nervous on Pesach. We're very nervous. And in the old days, it could be that we had a right to be nervous. We had a hell of a paranoia. I don't have to tell you how paranoid you are. I'll just end off as now in the Mincha now, but when the late Chief Rabbi Jacobowitz came to visit, I'd just come to Sydney, 1996, 97, Shavuos, he came. Anyway, bottom line is, somebody asked him something unrelated to this, but basically said, you know, don't be suffer from anti-Semitism paranoia. Because in those days it was a bit more paranoid than it is today. But, you know, Jews are suffering from anti-Semitism paranoia and all this kind of stuff. And anyway, so he told the story, you know. He said, you know, it's a story of a well-groomed gentleman who comes down to catch the tube in London. And next to him, he finds himself standing next to an old little yid. And he says, sir, do you have the time? And the guy looks at him up and down, ignores him. He says, sir, sorry, do you have the time? Complete ignore. Third time, he thinks, what, have I said anything wrong? So the guy looks, this old little yid looks at him. He says, you know, I'll tell you what. He says, I'll tell you what, I'm not telling you what the time is. I'll tell you what the time is. We're going to get chatting. We're going to get on the tube. We're going to become friendly. You're going to talk to me. I'm going to talk to you. You're going to find out that I have a granddaughter who's not married. And you have a son who's not married. You're going to want to make a shidduch. And I don't want a son-in-law without a watch. he said basically that's how paranoid we are about assimilation. It's about assimilation, right? So he said, yes, come to Pesach. We're meshugah. Right? The question is, how meshugah? Right, how much sugar? Are we sugar enough already, and it's good, or we need to be more sensitive to chomets, right? That's the kind of story. So anyway, that's the basis of kidney yot, and you know, you see, you will be able to get very interesting stuff online. You'll see where people are going.
Do you have to be more worried this year being the year after Shemitah?
No, I mean, I think at the end of the day, the Shemitah issue is not.
Nothing. And so, is quinoa
acceptable
or not?
I've used quinoa.
On Pesach.
Yeah.
Against your will.
You use the word used. Does that mean?